In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Usable news and information for your job. And now, here's Francis Rose.
Welcome to the program for Thursday, October 27, 2011 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's industry chatter today in the 3 o'clock hour. And a conversation today about an aspect of federal contracting that we very rarely cover on this program. I'm fortunate to have in the studio Jean Gilson. She's the Senior Vice President at DAI. And, Jean, it's a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Tell me about DAI and what you do and how you serve the federal government.
Where to begin? DAI started in 1970. It was the vision of three young folks just coming out of Harvard who had been working alongside the military for the most part in sort of the heady Peace Corps days. And they came out of Harvard thinking, you know, we think we can help the federal government implement their foreign aid program in a better way. And their vision was a good old-fashioned American capitalism. A lot of people thought at that point that aid needed to be a philanthropic venture. They said, we're going to make this a business.
Mm-hmm.
Fundamentals of driving costs down, efficiency, welcoming and embracing competition, innovation, and using technology. And here we are 40 years later, really with those same fundamentals in place for us. So what we do is we basically, for 95% of our business, we work for the U.S. Agency for International Development, and about 90% of our work is with that agency. We do work for the U.K. government and some other private clients, but basically our space is with USAID, and we work all over the world. We have about 100 projects right now in 60 countries. We employ about 3,000 people. We divide our work among technical sectors. And I was coming over here and I thought, well, there's probably about 45 technical topics that we have. I'll limit it to five that we've grouped them into.
Okay.
One is stability, conflict mitigation stability. The other is energy and environment. The third is governance. Fourth is economic growth. And the fifth is health. And basically, those are the five areas that are more or less divided equally at the company.
Mm-hmm.
Economic growth is probably our biggest sector.
I want to talk about, there's a lot there I want to latch on to, but I mentioned before we went on the air, as I read your bio, the juxtaposition of where we are physically near the National Cathedral and where you started your career, essentially, coming out of Georgetown University, to think about leaving Georgetown when you graduated, which is about, what, 2 miles from here at the most. You've been all over the world, and now here you are in 2011, 2 miles essentially from where you started. Your office, I see, is in Bethesda, which is just another couple of miles up the road. That must be a fascinating thought process to think about that whole progression.
It is. It makes me seem like a little bit of a homebody, I guess. But actually, I started my career in I'm a Chicago girl.
Uh-huh.
And I actually started out this journey in commercial banking.
Mm-hmm.
And I've told few people this story, but basically after doing that for a while and getting involved in a lot of the leveraged buyouts of the 1980s and seeing what I was working on, I thought that I wanted to do something different. A lot of the deals that I was working on led to a lot of layoffs, quite frankly, and consolidation during the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I want to do something different. And I went back to graduate school, which is actually where I met my husband. And came down to Washington. I actually started at DAI 22 years ago.
Hmm.
Left DAI, went into public service, and probably the most rewarding part of my career has been working for USAID.
Mm-hmm.
That job took me overseas. I opened the first Vietnam USAID office since the fall of Saigon in 1975, and I can tell you, that was a real career highlight for me, and working with the Vietnamese during and shortly after the establishment of diplomatic relations, just fascinating. Came back here, worked in the Policy Bureau for Aid, and then I ended up coming back to DAI after many years. That's a big tribute, I think, to that company and the mission and values that company stands for.
You mentioned, as you were talking about DAI and what you do and how you do it, that for a long time there was kind of a perception that competition and development were at opposite ends of the spectrum and never the twain shall meet. How did your company and how does your company connect those two to build a business model that works for your company, but that also works for the federal government and works for the people in the countries where you're doing the development work?
You know, the federal government has a number of different ways that it can implement its foreign assistance program. And you bring up something that is sort of a chatter around a lot of companies, and I want to try to put as positive a spin on it as I can. Having worked for aid, I'm pretty familiar with the processes. And essentially, there's two sort of legal instruments that the government can use. One is called a grant, and that is intended to support the good work of an organization. And those are organizations, you hear a lot about those kind of organizations, World Vision, Catholic Relief Services. I don't want to name too many because I'll get
sure.
in trouble for not naming enough of them.
Right.
On the other side, you have the instrument called a contract, and that is intended to be much more of a customer relationship
mm-hmm.
where the government has outlined its needs, and there is a competitive process to bid on that and deliver for that contracted set of issues. And the government, over the years, there's been a lot of back and forth on this, but essentially it's usually either 60-40 or 40-60, and so I basically say it averages to be about 50-50.
Mm-hmm.
They use the grants. The other 50% of the time they use the contracts. And there's value in both of those. So DAI does not have its own agenda mm-hmm. that it goes out seeking grant money for in order to implement the work. We're a mission-based organization, a values-based organization. We recruit a lot of talent on that basis, but essentially we have a customer relationship with the federal government.
And I imagine in the kinds of work that you're doing that can give the government some things that they don't get from someone that they're working with on a grant basis. Talk about what that means to the government.
Well, what that means, I think, is that if you're looking for a certain type, I'll give you an example. In Vietnam, when Vietnam and the U.S. signed a bilateral trade agreement, I remember having a discussion with my contracting officer at the time, and I said, what are we going to use? Are we going to use a grant? Or are we going to use a contract? And it was pretty clear pretty quickly that we needed to use the contracting mechanism because there were very, very specific things to keep on track with the trade agreement
mm-hmm.
Over the years. There were certain things that were going to come into play in a very kind of methodical schedule. And if we had used a grant, the government wouldn't necessarily have been able to tell a grantee, you're going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
So in the contract, they get, more or less what they have specified. Now, the interesting thing about the contracts, the interesting thing about development generally, and I don't want us to stray too far into a different topic, but one of the things that we're hearing a lot about now is using fixed price contracts.
Mm-hmm.
That's a government-wide, kind of discussion.
Yeah.
In development, that's very difficult because what I didn't say about that trade facilitation project was that development happens in such an incredibly changing environment all the time that to do firm fixed price contracts is extremely difficult because the government, in order to achieve its objectives, U.S. government, needs to have the flexibility to say, okay, the Vietnamese want to do more here
mm-hmm.
and come back to a contractor and say, you signed this contract, I get that, but we have a real breakthrough here,
yeah.
and we're going to do something different. And so that brings into question all of the, because most of our work is on a cost reimbursable basis.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like building an F-10.
Right.
And
so when you, if you're locked into a fixed price, the
We might have to say no.
Yeah. The contractor's going to say, well, that's not the deal that we have, and that doesn't make sense for us moving forward.
Exactly.
Jean Gilson's my guest. She is Senior Vice President at DAI, and we'll continue our conversation on industry chatter in a moment on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Up to $50 out of the blue. That's the wellness incentive from the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. Complete our Blue Health Assessment and get up to $50 for qualified medical expenses. $50 out of the blue. Who knew? To learn more about the Federal Employee Program, visit whonew.fvpblue.org or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Can I help you?
Yeah, my brother got an Insignia HD Radio Portable last month, and he really enjoys his workouts now.
Yep, HD Radio broadcasts are great. All kinds of new stuff on the HD2, HD3 channels.
And the Insignia HD Radio Portable is $49.99?
Yes, it's a great value.
Whoa, lead the way.
And did you know Insignia also offers an HD Radio Boombox for just $99?
Insignia HD Radio receivers. Get them now at Best Buy. HD Radio. More radio, more value.
Things just don't happen. You need a plan. A federal career can last 30 years or more, and so can federal retirement. Tune in each Monday at 10 a.m. to get the information you need to plan your course for financial security, solid benefits, and optimum health care. 100% focused on the federal employee for your benefit. Presented by NITP has the answers to your mid-career and retirement planning questions. Listen to For Your Benefit Mondays at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Federal News Radio for an hour that can change your future.
We live in uncertain times. More than ever, federal agencies rely on TASC to accomplish the most important missions and protect America's way of life. Few in the world can do what the experts at TASC do. Trusted partners, honest counselors, TASC's highly specialized problem solvers use rare knowledge and deep experience to provide advanced systems engineering, integration, and decision support services that the U.S. government depends on to keep the country safe and secure. TASC, working for you and the nation. TASC.com.
And now, the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Efforts by the Federal Retirement Thrift Investment Board to roll out a Roth TSP are on schedule, and the board's executive director, Greg Long, says the new plan will likely launch in the second quarter of 2012, allowing feds to invest already taxed income so it can be withdrawn without being taxed again. The original rollout was scheduled for January, but after some delays, the plan is back on track. I'm Amy Morris.
These are hard times for federal employees. A multi-year pay freeze, rumors of furloughs, and discussions on reducing benefits are the realities that all federal employees face. Now more than ever, it's important to find ways to save your hard-earned money. One way is with life insurance from WEPA. WEPA offers lower rates and a premium refund policy that's returned over $58 million to its policyholders since 1996. To learn how much you can save, visit waepa.org. Once again, that's waepa.org.
Tom Temin here with a preview of tomorrow's Federal Drive. Veterans Affairs has been devoting more resources to treating mental illnesses among vets. The RAND Corporation will join us with a progress report. Plus, military drones are getting personal. We'll talk to the manufacturer of a lethal drone that fits in a backpack. Those stories and more tomorrow morning starting at 6 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. And for all the latest federal news, be sure to visit federalnewsradio.com.
We're back on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jean Gilson is my guest. She is a Senior Vice President at DAI, and their number one customer is the Agency for International Development, USAID. And we talked a little bit in the first segment about the five components that really are the core of how your company does business and what you do. Let's kind of run through just very quickly each of those pieces. The first one is stability, and I imagine that's something that's top of mind for people as we see over the last 6 months to a year what's going on in the Middle East, especially situation in Libya. Are you involved in any of those environments where either the United States or you mentioned the UK you work with also?
Well positioned around the world to help the U.S. government in this particular arena. We've been working alongside the military and alongside civilian agencies for many, many years, actually, in both conflict situations as well as post-conflict situations. And I could go back probably as far as the 1970s, but or even more recently with Bosnia and the genocide there. Afghanistan represents about 40% of our business, and a large chunk of that work is stability. But you're right, we're in other places too, in Somalia, the Democratic Republic of Congo. We're working in Libya right now, Tunisia. We have sent teams into Yemen. The Arab Spring, of course, there is no cookie cutter to describe the Arab Spring. You've got a lot of different countries doing different things and having different revolutions with different results. But that represents a very big part of our business, and it's something that a lot of people in this space don't realize that we do, and that is work very, very closely in the security sector.
The whole issue of, I think as a country, we have a tendency, first of all, not to pay attention to what's going on in other countries nearly enough. Secondly, I think as a country, our general population fails to understand that the most critical work, I imagine, is done once a country's no longer in the headlines. I mean, the hardest work for Libya probably is right now.
Yeah, that's right.
Now that Gaddafi is gone, and ensuring that somebody who's just as bad or worse doesn't come along to fill that vacuum. What is the role that the United States, that aid, and your company plays in trying to obviously not pick winners and losers, because that's what that's up to the people of the individual country. But once there's an autonomous authority there, what's the next step as far as what we do as a country and what you do as a company?
Well, I think, you know, the key there is once a governing structure is in place, and that's actually really the challenge right now in some of the countries in the Middle East. You mentioned, I think it was Libya, but you could say the same thing about Egypt. In Afghanistan, obviously, there is a government. The challenges are no less, actually, frankly, in Afghanistan. The critical components, I think, are governance and keeping the stability. One of the big issues right now in the Middle East is that there is, like I said, in some of those countries, the governing structure is not set up yet. So you have a situation where you have a lot of people that are looking for answers. They're unemployed. They don't have jobs. And so in our discussions with the folks in the Middle East that we're working with and that the U.S. government is trying to work with, one of the biggest issues is youth unemployment. And we have done, you know, tens and tens of projects all over the world over the last 40 years that focus on economic growth, job creation, and the new word now is inclusive growth. And so that's, I mean, economic growth is going to be one of the big initial things that has to happen in these countries. And, of course, the institution building. In both the countries that you mentioned, that's going to be a key issue. Expanding democratic institutions and governments is a big priority for the U.S. government right now.
When we think about Arab Spring, I think a lot of people go to social media and how the use of social media tools helped to spread the word about what was going on there and give people a sense of empowerment that they actually could do something collectively rather than just being individuals trying to affect change in these countries. Has that impacted how you go about doing your business in any of these countries and in any of these situations also?
No question that social networking and social media has become one of the global trends, if you will. It was interesting to me to see. I don't know what would have happened 10 years ago, but this morning I woke up to a LinkedIn request, you know, from you. So suddenly we're on LinkedIn, and every day there's something new on Facebook. I think it would be a mistake to completely attribute the Arab Spring to social networking, but there's no question that played a big role in it. And the way that we're doing development more and more, access to knowledge and, you know, mobile solutions, social networking, they're all making a tremendous dent in the inefficiencies of markets and weaknesses in governance structure. All over the world, you're finding mobile technologies now to solve problems. And, you know, you can be in Kenya now, and you need to sell your cow, and there's an app for that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You can keep track of natural disasters or man-made disasters through these mobile technologies. So it is absolutely changing the face of development. There's no question about
it. Yeah, it seems to me that when you or aid or State Department or anyone else has a message to get out, it can be distributed the same way the messages were distributed and reach the same potential audience that the efforts to effect change, governmental change, did in all of those countries.
Absolutely. And I think AID is going even further than that. And I, you know, full disclosure, having worked for AID, I tend to be someone who's extremely supportive and complimentary of that client. It was, as I said, I think it's just full of absolutely incredibly hardworking people. So I think that it's safe to say that they are constantly looking for new ways to employ technology to make things better. And they've got, they're investing in innovation. DAI recently won a project that is going to be helping USAID in innovation. The State Department is also trying to become as innovative as possible. Now, you might say, what does innovation really mean? And you can get into this discussion of, well, all that really means is there's less money, and so you've got to bring other resources in, or the private sector. I've come from a lot of meetings lately where they talk a lot about innovation, and in the same breath, they're talking about the budget cuts. And so you hear about more with less, more without more, and less with less.
Yeah.
The only thing that is certain is that we're not going to be doing less with more.
Yes, and we're not going to be doing more with more.
No, absolutely not.
Neither one of those. Gene Gilson is the Senior Vice President at DAI, my guest on Industry Chatter on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll continue our conversation in just a few moments.
This week's Experts in Health topic is diabetes prevention, featuring Dr. Karen Dodge with the Mid-Atlantic Permanente Medical Group at the Kaiser Permanente Severna Park Medical Center.
Diabetes is a rapidly growing health problem estimated to affect more than 8% of our population. It refers to a problem with the body's ability to make or use insulin. Prevention should be a priority, especially for those who are overweight or have a family history of diabetes. Simple and easy lifestyle changes have an enormous impact and can improve quality of life for people already living with the disease. Increase your physical activity. Benefits include weight loss, lower blood sugar, and boosting the body's sensitivity to insulin. Fit more fiber into your diet, such as fruits, vegetables, beans, and nuts. These foods lower your risk of heart disease, promote weight loss, and help to control blood sugar levels. Kaiser Permanente believes prevention is the best prescription for a happy, healthy life. Be well and thrive.
To learn more about Kaiser Permanente's experts in health, visit kp.org/midatlantic and click Meet Our Doctors.
Meeting mission goals through technology, brought to you by General Dynamics Information Technology.
As the intelligence community looks for ways to cut its budget over the coming decade, it's turning to IT efficiency to be a big contributor. The Director of National Intelligence says he intends for agencies to get half their budget savings by implementing more collaborative and common IT architectures and migrating more services to cloud computing. DNI James Clapper says the stretch goal will take some upfront investment, but he hopes the IT initiatives will pay big dividends over the next 10 years.
General Federal Dynamics Information Technology is dedicated to providing the latest, highest quality information technology services and resources to help organizations meet their mission objectives. Large-scale IT systems and communications networks are the strategic and operational heart of defense, intelligence, civilian government, and private business. They require the expertise of a company that delivers results. General Dynamics Information Technology, information technology, and professional services. Go to GDIT.com to learn more. That's GDIT.com.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit myvillagegreen.com. Listen to past shows and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Zymogen and Metagenics.
Cutting saw palmetto down to size. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, the herbal supplement saw palmetto has been promoted as a way to deal with an enlarged prostate gland, which can be a problem for men as they grow older. But researchers report no evidence that it works. The researchers looked at data on 369 men ages 45 and older who got up to three times the usual amount of saw palmetto extract. At Northwestern University Feinberg School of Medicine in Chicago, Dr. Kevin McVary.
Our findings rather definitively state there is no influence in any definable way in terms of urinary symptoms, quality of life, sexual health, or other aspects of prostate health.
The study in the Journal of the American Medical Association was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at hhs.gov. HHS HealthSpeed is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
18 months after the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act became the impetus behind health IT by providing incentives for meaningful use in electronic health records, agencies are faced with the difficult task of cutting spending while delivering affordable health care. Federal roundtables at AFSEA Bethesda's Health IT Day, November 2nd, at the Mayflower Renaissance Hotel in D.C., will explore how to accomplish this mission through the use of IT. Register today, afseabethesda.org/healthitday.
Wake up and drive in with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris on the Federal Drive. It's your early line on the day ahead from your trusted advisors. Tom and Amy give you a full view of the issues. Find out what your colleagues in other agencies are up to and what policy and congressional developments mean to you. The Federal Drive with Tom Tamman and Amy Morris. Weekday mornings from 6 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Back on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jean Gilson is my guest. She's the Senior Vice President of DAI. And we're on Industry Chatter today and having a few conversations that aren't typical for Industry Chatter today. And I appreciate you being here to talk about these things. Now, since your primary customer is USAID, there's a little bit of a wrinkle in your relationship with the government in that you are in a field of work that is really, I would imagine, more subject to maybe the whims of Congress is not fair. But I imagine you feel sometimes maybe almost like federal employees feel like it's pretty easy politically to go after either pay and benefits for federal employees or, in this case, foreign aid because them dang foreigners don't need more of our money, that whole mentality. Talk about how that affects the discussions that you're having with the agency and the discussions that you have ultimately with the people that work for you in these various countries around the world.
There, as you've pointed out, there is not a huge constituency for the work that we do. Part of that is USAID has not historically done a terrific job of telling their story.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is too bad because they have done incredible things over the decades. If they wanted to take credit for the IT revolution in India, they could probably do that.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of things that AID could take credit for, but they don't do that. So as a result, you get these inflows and outflows from the Hill of every couple of years, the dynamic seems to change. And right now we're in a very clear situation where the Hill is facing the need to have major budget cuts. And as we were talking before the show, I think that what USAID and the U.S. government is trying to do overseas is so incredibly important. It's incredibly important in the national interest. And a lot of people, my own family included, you know, my mother, my brother, and others, they think that we're spending about 10% of the budget on foreign affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we're not. The entire foreign affairs budget is about 1% of the budget, and of that, only a quarter of it really defines the space that this industry works in. So in a good year, maybe $13 billion, which sounds like a lot of money and is a lot of money,
mm-hmm.
But is very – it's a quarter of 1%
mm-hmm.
To gain what we think are huge achievements in terms of the goals that the U.S. government has set out for itself in development around the world. So this becomes very challenging for us down on the Hill. We do a lot of advocacy on the Hill on behalf of the industry through the Professional Services Council as well as the Coalition of International Development Contractors. We do it on our own behalf as well. It's pretty clear that we're in a very austere budget environment. It's not – I don't see that breaking anytime soon. So we're looking at probably some pretty drastic cuts. And I think the question of how does the administration interact with the Hill, and how do they focus and prioritize what we can do with that money? What is the most important thing to do? And I will just do another shout out for AID here. I was just at a meeting the other day where they really are making great strides to try to reform the agency, focus in on its core objectives. They've got seven core objectives. They relate to but are not completely similar to the Millennium Development Goals. They need to increase food security. They need to promote global health and health systems. They want to reduce climate change effects and promote low emission growth, promote inclusive growth, expand the number of stable, prosperous, democratic states, deliver humanitarian assistance when it's needed, and of course, prevent and respond to crises and conflict. That sounds like a lot to do for $15 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that focused? That doesn't maybe sound very focused, but it's a new policy framework for the agency, and I think they really are trying to be responsive to this new austere environment that we're in. The administration has had some, USAID in particular, has had some ups and down with the Hill. The tension then on the other side is you've got Jack Lew writing a letter to the Senate and House appropriators to say, you better not cut any of our core foreign policy / foreign aid programs, or President Obama's going to veto the bill. And,
mm-hmm.
And so there's got to be some sort of common ground
yeah.
in the middle there. And companies like DAI, who are the bigger companies, we are right in the middle of that.
Yeah, tension. In that situation, it sounds like USAID becomes the Raggedy Ann doll in the midst of the of the 8-year-old girls pulling on each arm, right?
That's a good good analogy.
Why do you think that agencies like USAID have not gone out of their way to take credit for the successes that they've had? And it's not peculiar to that agency. I've said many times on the air, I don't think any federal agency is really very good at doing its own PR and talking about the successes that they've had on a national level.
You know, I wish I knew the answer to that question. It's frustrated me for a long time, and it's probably frustrated a lot of people in the industry. And I'd like to think that USAID was going to get better at that. I heard this is probably not true. I had heard that somehow buried in the Foreign Assistance Act, there's some sort of prohibition on doing that. I need to obviously do more research on that before saying that categorically. It's very interesting because the opposite is true in the UK, where they work very, very closely with some of the NGOs, and they've got a very good campaign to make sure that the UK taxpayers are exactly aware of what they're doing. They've got a lot of buy-in in the UK for what they do, and it's just it's unfortunate. What that results in is other people having to tell the story. And again, in the case of grants versus contracts, when it's a grant, typically the grantee does the promotion of the work, and because it is, again, a grant supporting their good work, they take the credit, if you will, in air quotes there. Contractors, on the other hand, we're doing something on behalf of the government. They've asked us to do it. We're a contractor. And it's been a little bit more delicate as to whether or not contractors should be taking credit for that. So, again, it's a difficult situation.
But I wonder, even if there is a restriction that, like the one that you talked about possibly being there, if there's a line there, I imagine, between blowing your own horn and just demonstrating return on investment. And it would seem that the return on investment conversation would be valuable on both sides of that equation, the agency doing the investing and generating the return, and the taxpayer understanding where his or her money is going.
Couldn't agree with you more. And there are probably hundreds of documents and analyses out there that if somebody took the time and did a research project to look over the past five decades, maybe it's six now, what have the successes been? Because those are easily documentable. It's this gets us to the question of measurement and reporting, and it is harder to development is a difficult thing to measure, and often it takes 20 years for something, even that at the time, let's say the relationships that AID built with some of the leading universities in India in the 1960s. It may have been the mid-80s before that actually caught up with itself. It could be a generation. Vietnam, it could be a generation.
Let's. I want to come back to that. I have to squeeze a break in here, but I want to come back to that and talk about measurement and demonstrating compliance when we continue on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jean Gilson's my guest. She's Senior Vice President for DAI, and we'll continue our conversation in a moment.
Are you a mid-career professional thinking about improving your digital skills? Or maybe you're trying to retool with a focus on using social networking? American University's online certificate in digital media skills allows you to work full-time while gaining digital media skills to advance in your career or reposition yourself in the job market. The digital future is here. Learn more about American University's graduate certificate in digital media skills at american.edu/soc.
On November 9th, the Washington region will discover a new way to give. During those 24 hours, your local nonprofits will unite to raise millions of dollars at givetothemax.org. Find and support the organizations that matter most to you in a single online location. Be on the forefront of the next generation of giving and make a difference in our communities. Give to the max. Give local. Give fast. Give smart. On November 9th at givetothemax.org.
Retirement is expensive, but dinner won't be because it's on me. Hi, I'm Mark Tabron, host of How to Protect and Grow Your Money on Federal News Radio. Join me for an informative dinner seminar at Rips Casual Dining on October the 27th in Bowie, Maryland. We'll talk about ways to help you disaster-proof your retirement. Call 1-800-783-1564 to make a reservation. Seating is limited, so call now, 1-800-783-1564. To learn more, listen Saturday mornings at 10:30 a.m. for How to Protect and Grow Your Money on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Newsmakers on the Federal Drive with Tom Temin and Amy Morris.
Casey Coleman, the CIO of the General Services Administration.
The top priority, that's the preparations for our move back into our headquarters building in early 2013. That's number one, that must work. Our next priority is really another foray into the cloud. That's the rollout of an enterprise version of Salesforce.com. And we have now signed an enterprise agreement with Salesforce for the use of their customer relationship management module.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/federal. Drive.
Did you know Federal News Radio can also be heard on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland? Check it out the next time you head to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor. Tune in to Federal News Radio for the latest news and information about the federal government and the federal contracting world. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
We're back on In Depth with Frances Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jean Gilson is my guest. She's Senior Vice President at DAI. And we'd mentioned the whole issue of measurement and compliance being tremendously difficult in your line of work, in the business in which your company participates. Obviously, when the government buys a widget, it either does what it's supposed to do, you know, paperclip clips papers, or it doesn't. And even in the services realm, where things can be a little bit more complex or a lot more complex, it's generally fairly easy in fairly short order to demonstrate that, yes, we've met all the requirements of this contract. The service that we're providing to you does what you wanted it to do when you wrote it up. Talk about how that works in your area, because you mentioned the India example and how we're looking sometimes in some of these areas of work at 20 to 30, and I imagine longer years of reference before you really know if we've achieved what we wanted to.
I think the I'm going to give a plug to somebody else for a minute here, because the best thing that I've read on this, and he would make a fascinating guest for you, is a paper on counter-bureaucracy by a guy named Andrew Natsios, who used to be the administrator for USAID. I worked for him when I was in the Policy Bureau, and the paper came out about a year ago. And basically, he describes the tension between what is very appropriate focus. I could get into a long discussion about whether it's gone overboard, and a lot of people would say that it has, that the appropriate focus on compliance and being the custodian of the taxpayers' dollars. And everybody in this business believes that that's important, and so does DAI. We spend a lot of money investing in compliance to make sure that we're doing just that. On the other side, so the clash is between this accountability and control structure versus technical excellence in development programming. And technical excellence in development programming doesn't happen on a quarterly basis or an annual basis. It's very difficult to set up the metrics for that. And sometimes, as I was mentioning in the previous segment, it can take generations to really come about. So this right now, I think, is the big struggle for USAID. They have a focus right now on measurement, on impact, and on evaluation. They're going to spend money on that. But if you read Andrew Natsios' paper, I think he believes, and I probably believe this myself, that there is a fundamental disconnect between those two things. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have compliance structures like we do. And I will tell you, we've got two former heads of USAID acquisition and assistance. So we've got two former senior. We know all the rules. We know all the regulations. We keep abreast of everything. It's very important to us. That's one of the ways that we make sure that we do the right things so aid can do business with us. We've got a general counsel. We're probably spending $1 million a year on that, mm-hmm. Which is $1 million. You know, is $1 million the right number? Maybe not. Could that $1 million be used on something else? Probably. Do we still need to keep track of the taxpayers' money? Yes. The problem is really on that measurement side, getting to the point where you can do really good impact evaluation. It's very difficult in this field because, you know, to do real impact evaluation, you got to set up control groups. And how do you do that mm-hmm. in development and say, well, you're not going to get it. You know, this community right next to you is not going to get anything. Mm-hmm. And this community is going to get something. And 20 years from now, we're going to see which one of you is better off. I mean, it's next to impossible.
Yeah. My guest is Jean Gilson. She's Senior Vice President at DAI, and we'll wrap up our conversation on industry chatter today in just a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
To win and deliver government contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Meet Tech Systems. While often behind the scenes, Tech Systems has worked with government agencies and systems integrators for over 25 years. In fact, every year, they deploy over 70,000 IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems is active across a broad spectrum of government programs and has developed deep relationships who understand what works well and who does it best. Thinking about cybersecurity, working on a cloud computing initiative. Tech Systems addresses critical program gaps related to people, projects, and work functions. Their delivery models scale from staff augmentation to IT project and outsourcing services to support transition, ramp-up, surge, and ongoing program support needs. Learn more at techsystems.com. TEKSystems.com.
When it comes to your health and that of your family, you want security and peace of mind. That's why more federal employees have chosen the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program for over 50 years. And it has one of the largest networks of doctors and hospitals. Who knew? That's the security of the Blue Cross Blue Shield Federal Employee Program. To find out more, visit whonew.fepblue.org. Or call 1-800-411-BLUE.
Welcome to Beltway Q&A, provided by EMC. Our guest is Dan Doherty, Vice President, EMC Federal. Dan, with the backup and recovery growing two times faster than the production storage environment, how can cost and complexity be reduced?
Gartner predicts that by 2012, almost 80% of backups will be to deduplicated solutions like EMC Avamar and Data Domain.
So EMC can reduce the cost of backup and recovery by up to 50%?
Yes. Almost 7 out of 10 customers with a mission to reduce the cost and complexity of backup choose EMC.
Available on Soup 4 through Force 3.
What is the military health system's quadruple aim? How is DOD ensuring it has a healthy and fit force? And what is DOD doing to reduce costs without sacrificing the quality of care delivered? Join host Michael Keegan on the next The Business of Government Hour as he explores these questions and so much more with Dr. Jonathan Woodson, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Health Affairs within the U.S. Department of Defense.
Have you been in government contracting, procurement, or acquisition for 30 years? NCMA has. Join the National Contract Management Association for the 30th Annual Government Contract Management Conference, November 14th and 15th in Bethesda, Maryland. The conference draws more than 1,000 government contract management professionals. Hear from respected speakers such as Scott Gould, Deputy Secretary, Department of Veterans Affairs, Martha Johnson, Administrator, GSA, and Shay Assad, Director, Defense Pricing, DOD. Learn more at ncmahq.org today.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Jean Gilson is my guest. She's the Senior Vice President at DAI. As we look around the world, and it's almost impossible to anticipate where a company like yours and where an agency like USAID might need to go next, and that makes it really difficult to plan. How do you do the kinds of planning that most companies are able to think about moving forward in a fairly organized, logical way? That I'm certainly not saying your company doesn't do it in a logical, organized way, but for me, trying to conceptualize how that looks, it's really difficult to do.
It's incredibly difficult because even though we do have a pretty robust research and analysis department, and of course we've got an army of people who are out talking with our client all the time, mm-hmm. Because we are subject to geopolitical shifts or foreign policy changes, it is actually quite difficult to plan. So one thing that we have perfected over the years is to both try to be forward-looking and anticipate trends, or at least anticipate them earlier than our competitors, but also to be opportunistic and to be flexible, agile, nimble because you never know what's going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there have been several examples of this over the years. You've got the fall of the Berlin Wall. Okay, game changer.
Yeah.
Game changer.
And came and from out of nowhere within like a week, right?
Out of nowhere. Game changer for us. It helped us to, and game changer for the United States government, because they decided right around that time period to change the way that they did some of their contracting, because they simply couldn't. This is when the IQCs became very, very popular in, I'm sure the IDIQs had been popular with the Defense Department for many years, but mm-hmm. wasn't really an instrument that was used with USAID. Another game changer was the financial crisis, 1997, 1998.
Mm-hmm.
Big game changer for the globe as well as for the company. And the most recent game changer, and something that we're clearly looking at, is the Middle East and North Africa. And so that becomes sort of an obvious, yes. And rather than look at it just from a client perspective in that particular situation, we're looking at it from what are the development problems, what do we know how to do, who are the clients out there? Because we do have aspirations, even though aid will probably always be our number one client, we do have aspirations to become a recognized global development company mm-hmm. with a lot of other clients as well. And so that's how we do it. And, but you also have to look at, rather than it being a geopolitical event, you look at something like sub-Saharan Africa and the challenges there. We follow a lot of those kinds of trends all the time and keep in close contact with our client.
Mm-hmm. You remarked during the first break, I think it was, that we'll have a lot more to talk about than we'll have time to do it. And that's indeed the case. I have a whole long list here, and we're out of time for this hour. So I would love to have you come back and continue this conversation at some point.
I would love to come back anytime, Francis.
Jean Gilson is my guest. She's the Senior Vice President at DAI on Industry Chatter this afternoon on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Hour number two of In Depth with Francis Rose right around the corner on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.